Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. Our selection this month is by V.S. Kamanis, an author who tells us that most of her story ideas come from her time as an attorney for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. She has 5 volumes of short fiction to her credit, and most of the stories have legal themes, as do her mystery novels featuring series character Dana Hargrove. The most recent volume of this author's short stories, Your Pick, Selected Stories, won the 2019 Eric Hoffer Award for Best Short Story Collection. Here is B.S. Kamanis reading her tale, Collector's Find, the first of 3 stories she's contributed to EQMM from our September-October 2013 issue.
Rosalind heard the click as the outer door opened, a shutter of the glass panel as it closed. Soles of business Oxfords sanded the floor and settled into place, hesitated, crossed the empty reception room toward her open inner door. A single breath and the square edges of a man filled the frame. His immaculate presence made her see forgotten things. A jutting file drawer, folders teetering on the couch, a jagged pile of motions on the desk. Ancient cases from bygone years surrounded her, a mess needing elimination. Her eyes skimmed the chaos, found the man's face, and quickly brushed past him to a framed diploma on the wall, noticeably askew. She lifted a lipstick-stained paper cup, raised an eyebrow, and dared another look at him. Sipped. The coffee, mottled with powdered creamer, was cold. "Miss Blindstorter?" She nodded, smiling inwardly. To a woman of 46, the word miss was a bit of a joke. "I'm in need of an attorney," he said, a ray of light finding the dust. "Different." "Come in," she invited, pointing. Neatly erect in a fine, tailored suit, he entered. Why wouldn't a man like this consult an attorney uptown? He took the seat indicated, sending a crackle of aging leather into the silence. "I understand you specialize in real estate." The question gave away his source, the Yellow Pages. After a 5-year involuntary leave of absence, Rosalind had no other choice. "That's right," she said. "I'm pursuing a real estate venture, some commercial properties. I need an attorney to look over the paperwork and attend the closings." Rosalind nodded, cleared a wad of phlegm in her throat, and pushed the coffee cup behind a stack of papers. "I can do all that," she said, panic rising. The man was too cool, his words gliding off a fresh pink tongue, retracting smoothly into a full mouth. Not a whisker was visible in his gleaming jaw, although his hair was dark, the crisp edges recently snipped. Mercury eyes, deep like wells, were shadowed with a hint of sleeplessness. He was about her age or younger, maybe older. She could never tell with men. Their lives weren't displayed on their faces the way Rosalind's past had come to rest in hers. "I'll need some information," she said, pulling out a yellow pad and letting it fall on the newspaper she'd been reading. She fished a pen from a jangle of paper clips and rubber bands in the top drawer. "Your name?" He produced a business card. "Sergei Rankoff, President, Collector's Find, Distributors." "Collector's Find," she repeated, needlessly scribbling. "We wholesale collectibles to souvenir shops, philatelic dealers, and 5 and dimes, explained Rankoff. "Stamps, coins, dolls, decorative plates, porcelain figurines, ashtrays, bric-a-brac." "Bric-a-brac?" "Odds and ends. You'd be surprised what people like to collect." Their eyes caught, and a corner of his mouth twisted upward, confirming that he'd come to the right place. Even now, she often relived that day 6 years ago when Estrella walked into the offices of Spitz and Blindstorter, P.C. It was 1990, a year when things between Roz and her partner Derek had gone from bad to worse in love and the law. Within a month of each other, they'd both turned 40, the number hitting Derek hard. Overnight, his hair turned a shocking jet black, and he replaced the old spice with patchouli of all things. His eyes started to roam, and Rosalind, with her undying hopes, became the fool. She cast suspicious looks and spoke in veiled threats. "I never proposed," he would say, whenever she curled her lip to bare the fangs. Derek's professional ethics, never the best, slipped into the gutter. Casualized the court, lapsed deadlines, and shoddy research defined his work. Not that Spitz and Blindstorter didn't cut corners, even Roz herself in dire need, but the dereliction had risen to a new level. Judges, attorneys, and clients were becoming impatient and demanding, while Derek, oblivious, kept showing up late if he showed up at all, sporting his new clothes and deliberately tousled locks, unable to mask his jazzed look and the tremor in his hands. Long nights with the ladies? Or something worse? Rosalind suspected a return to the white powder, an old friend of theirs from those all-nighters in law school 15 years ago. Derek was mired in this questionable state midway between professional respectability and irrevocable demise on the day Estrella Marquez slithered in, clutching her little cocaine indictment. Released on bail, unhappy with her current counsel, she was out shopping for a new attorney, decked out for the purpose in one of her distinctive second skins, a fuchsia jersey and metallic silver capris. Derek conducted the intake interview, leaving Rosalind with just a trace of Estrella's flowery scent as Derek's office door shut behind them, sealing attorney and client inside for a very, very long time. A week later, she returned, claiming to have an appointment. Derek was out of the office, God knew where. "He's in court," Rosalind declared, hoping it was so. "Mr. Spitz, he want the information some kind of thing about, what do you call that, to throw out the evidence?" Estrella patted the outside of her large shoulder bag, blinked scoops of dark lashes, and shifted her weight from right hip to left in her taut crimson capris. "A motion to suppress." "Right, the suppress thing." "Come with me." Rosalind would take care of this. Estrella followed, bringing along a pungent tropical fruit scent, and lowered herself with a wiggle into the leather chair, which even then had started to grow brittle. "Wait here," said Rosalind. She went to Derek's office and retrieved the file. Inside, she found more than enough information to prepare the standard motion papers. The police report and indictment told of a common undercover surveillance. A known dealer had given a package to Estrella, who'd placed it in the trunk of her car and driven off. Officers stopped her, seized a 10-kilo package and her car, a late-model sedan, perfect for the forfeiture program. Rosalind knew the scenario well. Derek had no need for a second consultation with his client. Back in her office, Rosalind propped her pillowed backside against the edge of the desk and gave the girl a quick stare down. "Don't worry, honey." She slapped the manila folder against an open palm. "We'll fix you." Sergei, on the other hand, was a person Roz looked forward to seeing. The perfect client for her new law practice, 1996. After a few appointments, he began dropping in at will to consult my attorney. She didn't wish so much to discourage this as to impress him with her little shows of busyness and importance the moment he knocked on the door jamb. A hastily scribbled note on a legal pad or a reluctantly lifted eye from a law book, the props always in reach in the event he called. His visits were changing her habits. Mornings, she awoke early now, spending extra time rummaging in the closet and dresser drawers, picking through stained and raveled undergarments, pushing aside dusty, outdated fashions, everything a size too small. Odors, previously unnoticed, seemed woven into aging fabrics. She squinted hard at herself in the mirror, torn between needing and not wanting to see her face, willing to pretend something else in a fantasy land of dim lighting and failing vision. With alacrity, she sponged on wet amounts of foundation, penciled in the eyebrows, crafted a fuller version of her mouth beyond her lips, and filled in the maroon outline with a lighter shade. Never did she allow this portal to fade. After coffee, after lunch, 5 times a day, the mirror and lipstick emerged from her purse. Each time, Sergei brought her something from his cache of collectibles. She cleared a bookshelf, even dusted it, to display her swelling collection, proof of the number of times he'd come. A miniature stained glass window with the Lord's Prayer, a porcelain replica of Niagara Falls, a wind-up ballerina, a copper statuette of the United States Treasury cast from molten pennies. She accepted each gift with a thrill of gratitude, the corners of her painted mouth twitching upward, pushing at the encrusted layers of disappointment. She had plenty of time for him. As yet, she had only 2 paying clients, easy residential closings. Real estate was clean and uncomplicated, a pleasant relief from the messiness of criminals, but Sergei's interests were adding a new, challenging dimension. Several commercial deals were in negotiation. A fast food franchise, renovation of a dated strip mall, a used car lot, a Victorian house converted into professional offices. Roslyn found herself awash in concepts she'd never before encountered. Years with Derek and their criminal clients had chipped away at her native intelligence and integrity. Her intellect had grown sluggish. But Sergei was providing the impetus for self-renewal. She fought to reclaim herself, not wanting to fail in his eyes. "It's not even my car," Estrella said. "I borrow it, you know. I never have any cocaine. This bag's a white stuff. Could be powdered sugar. You seen any lab study? Where's the proof?"
"You wouldn't be indicted without a lab report."
"I don't believe it. It's a setup. You want to know what they do to me, those pigs?"
"I've got what we need for the motion."
"The big one. Pull me out of the car like that." Estrella violently tugged the arm of an invisible person. Herself, apparently. "Then the sweaty guy grabbed my other arm, and I don't even know they cops, you see? No police car, no badge, no blue shirt. They throw me on the car and pat, pat, pat." She demonstrated in every curve and niche of her body. "Right there on the street, and everyone watching. So disgusting, estos cerdos." While Estrella ranted, Rosalind flipped through the meager file, searching for the retainer agreement or proof of payment. Nothing. When she looked up again, Estrella was shackled and jammed into the back of a police car. "Lady, you going to the station, they say, and the sweaty one show me this white packages from the trunk. That could be powdered sugar, how do I know?" Incensed, she made a miraculous escape from police custody and sashayed around the room in agitated fury.
"Sit down, Estrella. No, sit down."
Rosalind had seen better play acting. "We've got enough for the papers. We'll ask the court to suppress the evidence and dismiss the indictment. But we can't do anything without a retainer. Didn't Mr. Spitz explain that to you?"
"Retainer?
Payment."
"Oh, sure, I pay you. How much is it? I have the money. I make jewelry, you know. You like these?"
She touched her dangling earrings. "I'm in the jewelry business. How much you need?"
"Well, it depends. More work, more expense."
Roz eyed the client, looking for signs of discomfort or resistance. Seeing none, she went for it. "You're innocent, right?"
"Of course, what I've been telling you."
"Then we'll be going to trial, and trials eat a lot of time and money."
"I don't care. Just keep me out of jail."
Estrella fished inside her shoulder bag and extracted an inch stack of worn 50s, bundled with a rubber band. Rosalind worked for a poker face.
"How much is that?"
She'd seen her clients with money like this so dirty it crawled with disease. Cash should be avoided in favor of a check to keep the state forfeiture hounds at bay.
"About 5,000.
Rosalind hesitated, sensing there was more.
"Not enough?"
Estrella blinked, the bills a dead weight in her hand.
"Trials usually go higher than 20 grand. We'll need at least half as a down payment."
"But why are they going to have a trial about some powder sugar? And what about the suppress thing?" The girl was making Roz work for it.
"Yeah, well, as good as we are, there's no guarantee. Some of these judges, let's see."
She glanced in the file. "You're assigned to Judge Weston. His brother's a police detective. You can't get anyone more in the DA's pocket." She rolled her eyes, a little play-acting of her own. It was enough to send Estrella back into the handbag. She pulled out a second stack like the first, piled the 2 up, and handed them over.
"This is all I got right now."
Roz took it, fingering the grime.
"I'm an artist, you know. We don't make that much in the jewelry business. You pay me back if there's no trial?"
"Sure, don't worry. We'll get you an itemized bill." She penciled $10,000 into a form retainer agreement, and Estrella signed without a glance. Roz pulled the client copy off the back and gave it to her. Later that day, when Derek returned, he didn't mention Estrella, whether forgetting or not wanting to admit the missed appointment. Rosalind considered what she'd done, but wasn't terribly worried. She knew the day would come when he'd open the file and see the retainer agreement, noting receipt of $1,000. She'd been careful. The alteration couldn't be detected. With beating heart and sweating palms, Rosalind divided the cash, deposited $1,000 into the partnership account. She stuffed $9,000 into the toe of an old sneaker at home and waited several days before depositing half of it into her personal checking account. She waited another week and deposited the rest. For a long time, everything was provisional with Sergei, mere talk. One day, he gave her a collector's edition of Princess Diana commemorative stamps displayed on blue foam in a plastic case, presenting the gift with an off-center smile. In his other hand was a sheaf of papers for her review. "They've accepted my offer on the professional building," he said. "Here's the contract. I'd like to close as soon as possible. Why don't we discuss it over lunch?" Rosalind accepted with a flutter in her rising chest and jammed the contract into her briefcase. What good fortune to be wearing, on the day of Sergei's unexpected lunch invitation, a new outfit made possible by his retainer. The navy suit, an optimistic size 12, was a snug fit, and her patent pumps elevated her to an unthreatening height, about 2 inches shy of his 5'10". He held out a hand and let her pass through the door ahead of him as she felt the heat of his eyes pinned to her girdled backside. Outside, Sergei flagged a cab and opened the door for her. She tumbled onto the slippery seat, feeling resistance against her thighs in the tight skirt. She tugged at it. He slid inside behind her too soon. Their hips touched, untouched. Rosalind scooched toward the window, placing her briefcase between them, and pulled out the contract. As the cab lurched into traffic, she scanned the document with a blasé look, becoming slightly nauseated with the sway and bump of the ride, while trying to discern at least the headings above the blurry fine print. She would not put on her reading glasses. "What do you think?" he asked. "Looks all right. Maybe a small problem here or there. Nothing I can't handle." "Of course, I have faith in you." He roamed her profile with his gaze. "Let's see," she said, flipping a page and running a red fingernail down its length. "Payment by bank check, certified check, or attorney's escrow check. Which bank is financing?" Sergei waved a hand dismissively and glanced away. "No need to worry about the bank. Let's get past the inspections first." She nodded, pointing an index finger in the air. "Right, let's get past the inspections." With this, all business aspects of their lunch meeting came to an end before they arrived at the restaurant, a 4-star establishment. After no and no again, Sergei overcame her resistance to a cocktail, followed by a bottle of wine with the meal. The alcohol loosened her mind and brought back those Friday lunches of years past with Derek, their ritual client-bashing sessions that often turned into real sloshers. Sergei was talking about his business plans for collector's find, letting his eyes stray, taking in her hair, her mouth, elsewhere. She said little. What would he think? What would he really think if he knew everything about her? When the bill came, he paid with crisp, clean 20s. She had a fleeting thought, a fear, really, that she should be the one to treat her best client and take a business deduction. But after the final red sip, her doubts evaporated with the vapors from her glass. He apologized for not having time for coffee and insisted that they meet again the following day. He would pick her up at her office. There was something he wanted to show her. Every Monday, Roz and Derek would review their cases and discuss scheduling for the week. The Monday following Estrella's visit, Derek pulled out the file and remarked, "So, you got the retainer in the Marquez case." "You forgot to get it the first time." "She said she'd bring it in. She paid, didn't she?" "I'll get the motion out this week." He tossed the folder aside and picked up another. His abruptness gave Roz the proof she needed of his guilty conscience. For weeks, they'd been conducting business this way, just enough to avoid professional havoc.
They spoke little and exchanged stony looks, silently acknowledging their discontinued intimacy. Rosalind could barely remember their last date, a fumbling collision and disengagement, excuses and leave-taking in the middle of the night. At work the next day, he was sappily patronizing, as if entitled to take credit for honoring a distasteful obligation. Despite their personal falling out, there hadn't been a professional dissolution. Rosalind convinced herself that Derek was still useful as a backup attorney, dodging the real reason, her hidden fear of going solo after all these years. And so she tried not to care, distracting herself with the money. She bought some new furniture and a foxtail jacket. How would Derek react when he learned of the 10 grand? Revenge can be sweet. But the Derek she knew, the man who seemed to lack a conscience, was still beholden to his partner and lover of 15 years. Roz guessed that when he found out he would vent and hurl obscenities, but then quietly let it go, justifying her little theft as an informal domestic settlement. "I am impressed," said Rosalind, standing outside Sergei's enormous warehouse, a gray tin-roofed structure in a desolate industrial sector. Sergei unlocked a massive padlock and slid the door open, revealing the vast contents, boxes stacked 10 feet high in dozens of rows. Feeling like another speck of dust, Roz settled inside the threshold as he closed the door behind them, bolting it shut. The echoing vibration sent a shiver of excitement through her, not unlike the climactic vertigo that overcame her in high places, rooftops, or cliffs. The thrill was familiar, but long forgotten, connected with a different kind of event in a former life. "Your business is larger than I thought." "We have accounts with every outlet selling collectibles in the tri-state area." "I had no idea there was so much demand." She drifted along the center aisle, her hand grazing the outermost cartons. She stopped. "What's in here, for instance?" "You'd be amazed what people like to collect." Sergei took her elbow and directed her a few rows down to an open box. He pulled out a 3-inch wooden replica of a mallard duck, inserted the bill between parted lips and blew, sending a quack through cardboard canyons. "All these boxes?" "The entire row, all ducks." He kissed the mallard and placed it in her open palm, tenderly pressing her fingers around it, leaving behind the warmth of completion. "This item retails for $25, although I purchased it for only $2. His eager eye gleamed a boyish desire to impress. "That's quite a markup," she said in a church whisper. "People will pay extraordinary prices for these knick-knacks. My business is extremely profitable. Now you can appreciate my need for investments and tax shelters." "Yes, of course." "And I want you to be a part of this, all of it." He waved his arm in a semicircle, including the entire inventory. Vertigo surged again, sparks and tingling. She backed into a wall of boxes to steady herself, but the next instant was startled by the sound of deliberate footsteps on concrete. Far down the row, a man approached. Sergei thrust out a flat palm, bringing the man to a halt. "Excuse me," he apologized cordially, and went off to meet the interloper. 100 yards distant, they conferred in low voices. From their body language, Sergei was clearly in charge, his gestures vivid and purposeful. The stranger nodded in subservience until, with a final nod, he turned and disappeared into the stacks. Taking long, even strides, Sergei returned to her, as she thought of what he'd said, how he'd needed her as a business associate, maybe wanted her in another way. Her heart pounded high up into the squeeze of flesh between her jutting lapels, speeding recklessly into her fragile wall of caution, smashing it to bits. There was a small miscalculation, an absurd impossibility. A week after Derek filed the motion, the police lab admitted a rare mistake. The evidence samples from 2 cases, Estrella's and another, had been mislabeled and switched. As it turned out, Estrella's white powder wasn't cocaine at all, but a mixture of sugar, baking soda, and talc. The cartel had used her as a decoy to divert police attention from the real transaction, a bigger one, going down elsewhere in the city. Estrella had beaten the charges, no thanks to Derek's boilerplate motion. Rosalyn reasoned away her fears. To the cartel, $10,000 in legal fees was mere scratch from the petty cash account, a necessary cost of doing business. The Spitz and Blindstorter receipt would satisfy Estrella's superiors and keep her in good stead with her boss. But then, something unexpected happened. Estrella acted on a chance for a little personal profit. "That client Marquez," Derek said one morning. "She's calling me, screaming about $10,000. Said you promised a refund. Where's the money? I don't see a deposit in the account." Roz, working at her desk, dared to lift her eyes. "You believe this girl, this lying coke dealer?" "I don't care who she is. No one's going to say a lawyer stole $10,000 unless there's something to it." "Oh, I'm accused of stealing now." "You didn't put 10 minutes into this case. I know I didn't." "Oh, but you did spend a lot of time with her." He laughed bitterly and raked the bottle-black hair from his forehead, his face a sickly bluish white. "You think you're so smart," he spat. "You haven't got a clue what you're into." His tone was alarming, but she rolled her eyes, feigning disinterest. He saw through her game. "Pay up, or we're through."
"We're already through."
"Yeah, well," he sneered. "I'm talking about the business." He turned to go, then swiveled around to face her. "She calls me again, I'm sending the call to you." After he'd gone, she remained unsettled. There was no obvious explanation for his threats. Another attorney might fear the grievance committee, a malpractice lawsuit, or loss of reputation. But these things wouldn't concern Derek in his current state of dissipation. It didn't make sense. But in the end, his motives didn't matter. Rosalind simply couldn't live with the thought that she was no better than the thieves she represented. And Estrella's voice rang in her ear, call after call, demanding her money. Roz would have returned it all if she could, but she had only $3,000. She deposited the $3,000 into the Spitz and Blindstorter partnership account, gave herself a $2,000 advance on paper, and sent Estrella a partnership check for $5,000 along with a padded bill for services covering the other $5,000. She waited a day, 2 days, a week. Apparently, it was enough, and the calls stopped. The first closing, the professional building, was easy. No financing or bank attorney, no complicated forms. Collectors' find cash had been accumulating, ready for investment. "Why should I pay interest to a bank?" Sergei scoffed. He was right, of course. The closing took all of 15 minutes. The deed was exchanged for a check from Rosalind's escrow account, recently funded by collector's fine check. Sergei, who rarely smiled, seemed ebullient. Over a glass of champagne at their celebratory dinner, he beamed with pleasure. "You are magnificent," he said, stroking the tops of her naked fingers with the smooth undersurface of his thumb. Rosalind tittered, sending a jellied spring of flesh upward. There was a small burst under her jacket. "A button?" "It was nothing, Sergei. You're the brains behind this, the one who made the deal." "Without you, though, without you." His thumb pressed a circular massage into the top of her ring finger, aided by the greasy lubrication of her gardenia hand lotion. In the days that followed, the closings strung along in quick succession. The meetings with Sergei accelerated, stressing her shelf of collectibles with the weight of their intercourse. Money flew, escrow checks were written. Rosalind tingled and hyperventilated. It became easier to give Sergei a set of deposit tickets, allowing him to stuff the escrow account directly with collector's fine profits. Rosalind simply confirmed her balance before showing up at the closing with her checkbook. After each transaction, he treated her to dinner, intimate hand-holding, and watery gazes, a sweet buss goodbye on the cheek. Sergei was old-fashioned that way, leaving her flattered and confused. His chaste foreplay must be a sign of their stage of life, she mused, proof of his respect for her. After the sixth transaction, it came. Everything from a dream, the wine and candlelight, Sergei's timid off-center smile as he opened a ring box to reveal the dazzle of an enormous gem, 2 or 3 carats, she couldn't guess. I've been looking for just the thing for you, Rosalind, he stuttered, fumbling with the ring. Her left hand rose to the occasion, ready to receive the magical coupling, a golden insertion into another world.
What do you think? He asked.
What did she think? She didn't need to think at all, other than to marvel at his sudden shyness and uncharacteristic inability to frame the question directly. But still she hesitated before answering, feeling acutely the moment of truth. Oh, she knew more than enough about him to make up her mind. He'd revealed every aspect of his business, including her in his dreams and investment decisions. But what really had she told him about herself? He deserved to know the truth about the theft and its humiliating aftermath. If she told him, would he still want her? She couldn't put it off any longer. Sooner or later, he'd find out.
Sergei, thank you. It's so beautiful. This being her first, she didn't quite know how to accept a marriage proposal, an implicit one at that.
I'm so thrilled, and I do accept, but there's just maybe a thing or two we have to discuss, things we should know about each other.
Tell me, what do you need to know about me? I'm an open book.
You? Oh, no, I didn't mean... You've been very forthright. What I mean is, maybe you need to know a few things about me, about my past.
Now, what sort of past could that be? You smoked marijuana in college. You've had a few lovers, maybe even committed a professional indiscretion or two.
Terrible things such as this, perhaps?
Professional indiscretion. She hiccuped uncomfortably on that one, but was gratified to see literally the proverbial tongue in his cheek. He took her hand in both of his, kissed the middle segment of her ring finger, letting the diamond brush his lips.
I'm interested, he said breathlessly, in the Rosalind I see before me now.
You don't need to drag the skeletons out. They're already pre-approved.
He was making everything so easy, and why not? Didn't she deserve something good after all she'd been through? It was better to say nothing, to go forward and say nothing at all. On the day they came for her, Derek wasn't around. She hadn't seen him in 3 weeks. He disappeared after she paid Estrella, leaving behind a mess of unfinished cases. Roz wasn't alarmed to see the men in her doorway, but when they identified themselves, bewilderment seized her. Why would the FBI be interested in such a tiny thing, the theft of a few grand from a coke courier? Then came their stunning announcement.
Rosalind Bleinstorter, said Special Agent Paul Bergen, the red-faced, beefy one. You're under arrest for money laundering.
The shorter, skinny one just smiled. They were very polite and allowed her to get her handbag before escorting her to the door, one in front, one behind. Dazed and sandwiched, she saw it like a movie on the skinny one's back, exactly the way things looked to them. Dirty cash in, clean attorney's check out. In the back seat of their car, with the lock clicked down, she laughed out loud, choking on bile and salty tears. How funny would it be if she told them the truth? Later, S.A. Bergen said he wanted to help her. She believed him, a man with a lion cub's face, square forehead, and scouring pad bush of hair.
You see, Rosalind, may I call you by your first name?
She nodded, in a fervent flush, thinking of him as Paul. After 2 hours alone, with him in that little single light bulb of a room, he was making her feel safe.
We've got bigger targets, he explained.
They were building a case against defense attorneys who laundered their clients' cash, hiding behind confidentiality rules. Paul believed that Rosalind, with her small-time take of only $5,000, was new at this, tempted just this once, and would never do it again.
Am I right, Rosalind?
She began to swoon under the power of his direct gaze and the lull of his deep voice, so different from the manic edginess of that man who'd imprisoned her heart and career for too long.
Now she was safe, released into the care of Paul Bergen, a rock of strength and solid goodness. He would protect her. These other attorneys, Rosalind, they were dealing in millions. If you work with me, turn state's evidence, I can cut you a deal, maybe a misdemeanor in a few months. I could see you out again in no time. Glassy-eyed, she nodded her agreement, finding hope in his words. I could see you. She did then what she always advised her clients never to do, waived her right to an attorney and started talking on her faith in Bergen's promise. Her clients always buried themselves this way, getting caught in their own lies. But she was smart enough to beat the game. She didn't need to admit her motives, the jealousy and base revenge. Too embarrassing. And what would Paul think of her then? She told him exactly what she'd told Estrella. It was a retainer, half of it refunded as unearned. But Rosalind, cash? You took cash from a cocaine dealer. What, a check's better? Credit card? Money order? It all comes from the same place. You'll put the entire defense bar out of business if we have to confirm a clean source. S.A. Bergen smiled, grew ruddier, impressed, maybe, by her argument. But then he turned on her, becoming the rough inquisitor, and it thrilled her. All the esquires are telling that story. You think I fall for it? Her eyelids fluttered. I'll tell you what really happened. You took street money for a law firm check and took a cut for your services.
Legal services.
Then why use your personal account? Explain that. She lowered her head. This is so embarrassing. She hesitated. He waited. I had to use my own account because of Derek. He's a little bit like you on this. Doesn't like street cash. A dirty check is better. She dared to throw Paul a conspiratorial wink. I was hiding it from him, that's all. That's not a federal offense, is it? Bergen's face resumed its pleasant, fleshy look, with the laughing gaze of a mild skeptic. Sure you weren't hiding anything else from him? She arched her backbone in spirited sassiness. You can imagine what you like. I've told it straight. Go on and ask the girl. Estrella? She's in the wind. But you can bet we'll be talking to Derek. Good luck finding him. I've tried. We have him. We're bringing him in now. Rosalind blanched. A cold pool of sweat welled in the shelf of her bosom. True to Bergen's word, within the hour, Derek was escorted into the station. Rosalind was seated in the hallway, planted there, she supposed, to witness his arrival. On his way to the interrogation room, he sent her a snarl that said he didn't like being hauled in to answer for her con games. But his worries were small. He hadn't taken the cash or written the check. He was soon released, and she never did learn what he told the investigators. Although her testimony wasn't very useful, Bergen made good on his promise. Rosalind was disbarred and served 4 months in a minimum security facility. For 120 long nights, alone in her room, she shared laughs and cocktails with Paul Bergen, grazed the steel wool on his head with her fingers, listened to his big, booming voice diminish to a whisper in her ear, promising, I could see you again. In no time, I could see you. The day came, bright and clear, when they unlocked the gate. She emerged onto an empty street, swiveled right and left, and stood silent to slow her pulse against the shattered dream. Disappointed, alone, afraid. It didn't take long, 12 hours maybe. The morning after Sergei's proposal, a subtle itch suggested itself with her involuntary reaction, left thumb pushing at the ring, jiggling the rock on top. Within another few hours, the irritation flared and the skin under the band grew pink and puffy. Still, she wasn't aware of the itch, so much as a dark, anticipatory excitement, triggering a memory. Early in their law practice, young and in love, Derek and Rosalind naively accepted a client with ties to organized crime. Gradually, they learned just how connected he was, a man who authorized executions and arranged torture for his debtors. In the end, the eavesdropping evidence was too garbled to prove the charges, and Spitz and Blindstorter won their client an acquittal. He was grateful, paid big money, and had plenty of friends in need of their services. The possibility held the lure of power and illicit wealth, but she and Derek understood the danger and made a pact never to accept another case like that. And now, here was Sergei, inspiring the same feeling. She sobbed bitterly, and when the shaking and choking subsided, the itch announced itself with unbearable urgency. Her thumb probed the ring, embedded in swollen red flesh. The ridiculous discovery squeezed a laugh from her lungs. As careful as Sergei had been, he couldn't have foreseen her skin allergy. The metal alloys in costume jewelry did it every time. Would she confront him on his next visit? As soon as she had this thought, another one surfaced. There wouldn't be a next time. Still, why hadn't he given her the real thing? Something nice as a farewell gift. To him, the cost would have been negligible. The answer was in his estimation of Rosalind, the way he truly regarded her, worthy of only cheap trinkets. Like the mallard, a $2 novelty that fetched him 25. 1994. 3 years after her release, Rosalind's second petition to reinstate her license had been denied, and she was making pennies in a graveyard typing pool, churning out legal briefs. One morning, after finishing her shift, she was on a crowded sidewalk when Derek nearly ran her down, weaving in and out with his nose to the ground. She hadn't seen him since the day of her arrest. On impulse, she stepped directly in his path. He looked up and took a step backward. She was the first to speak. "Well, hello." "Hey, Roz." His clothes were new and expensive, and his face older, the skin still pasty, the eyes bloodshot and wild. "Where are you going so fast? Running to court?" Derek's eyes shifted sideways, around her shoulder and back. "Hell no," he laughed. "I took down the shingle." "So, what's the new line?" "Insurance. I sell life insurance, making a living, no thanks to you." His smirk stoked her dormant rage. "You ruined your own career, screwing up your cases. I could have gotten you disbarred the way you dumped everything." He shifted from side to side, averting his eyes. "I had it up to here, you know. I had it up to here with you, Roz." "Who still has a license to practice? Not me. You did nothing to help me, saved your own neck, and let me stew." "You don't get it, Roz." He shook his head. "You have no idea what you were dealing with. Damn lucky I got it straightened out. Now, excuse me, maybe you jailbirds don't run by the clock, but I'm late." She jabbed a broken fingernail into his sternum. "I'll be back. I'm going solo, without your name to drag me down." "Great," he pushed around her. "I'll look you up in the law journal, under reinstated convicts." For the past 2 years, she'd been thinking about Derek's words, wondering what she wasn't getting. She wondered about it every night on graveyard, fingernails broken from endless pecking, and she wondered about it during the proceedings on her third petition for reinstatement, the successful one, and as she moved the old furniture out of storage and into her new office. Sergei had made her forget for a while, but her questions were still unanswered. "Damn lucky I got it straightened out." Derek had done something to save her, but from what? The shadowy part of the story was well within her power of imagination, yet lingered beyond her desire to know, plaguing her with an ominous certainty that the truth would, one day, descend full force upon her. This was the day. Before entering, the men must have heard the laugh that accompanied her bitter discovery of Sergei's counterfeit marriage proposal. She was too absorbed in misery to hear the shudder of the outer door and the click of footsteps in the reception area. The first one came to stand squarely in her inner doorway, filling the frame with an immaculate presence. The years had been kinder to Special Agent Bergen than to Rosalind. Still that thick scrub of hair and the big man padded and friendly physique. She always liked that about him, the fact that he was so much broader and bigger than she. He gazed at her like an old lover, she thought, but then the slight man behind him ruined it, stepping around to take his little jab, Paul's old partner.
"Good to see you again, Rosalind. Still doing the dirty laundry?"
He took out his handcuffs, but Bergen waved him away.
"We don't need to do that. You're not going to run, are you, Rosalind?"
His eyes roamed her face, the puffy pink eyelids, smeared makeup, and naked mouth. She shook her head. "No."
"You know why we're here, don't you?" Paul asked gently.
She did and she didn't. He pulled the cracked leather chair up close, sat down, and leaned forward, his giant lion's cub face inches away.
"I know everything, Rosalind, everything about before. I wish you'd told me. It was revenge, wasn't it? Estrella and Derek. He was screwing around on you, wasn't he?"
In a trance, she nodded.
"If I'd known, the prosecutor wouldn't have touched it. You wouldn't have gone to summer camp. Can we do it different this time?"
She nodded again.
"Can we get Derek this time? And Sergei?"
Tears came to her eyes at the mention of Sergei's name, but she summoned the will to speak.
"I want to cooperate." "I'm glad you do. There's others I could ask."
"Other women?"
"Yeah, Sergei's collection. The living collection. The ones who smartened up in time."
Roz hadn't smartened up, but she'd been saved. Back at FBI headquarters in that little room, she laid herself bare to Paul's drilling penetration, relishing his excitement at her revelations, the evidence he could use. That very morning, the feds had seized 1,000 kilos of cocaine from Sergei's warehouse, and worse, the cadaver hounds sniffed out the remains he'd buried there, his departed collection, the ones who hadn't smartened up in time. Agents had located Sergei and Derek and were arresting them at that very moment. She asked, and Paul filled in the gaps of what she didn't know. Back in 1990, Estrella enticed Derek into laundering for the cartel. The 10,000 was a test of his reliability. Bad luck that he was detained in court on the day of their crucial second appointment. But Estrella, foolish girl, read the cues wrong, understanding the word refund as code for laundering, believing that Rosalind was in on the plan. Derek ultimately saved them both from cartel retribution, sure death. He scrambled for the unpaid balance from personal assets. In the process, he passed the test and signed on for the life of the underworld. Estrella wasn't so lucky on her next assignment, her betrayal putting her under.
"But why am I going through this again? Why did he do this to me?" she asked Bergen.
"Sergei?"
"No, Derek. He already did me once."
"Yeah, well, he recommended a lot of people to Sergei. He was in the business. And you..." She smiled with trembling lips, relieved to unload her shame. "I was the obvious choice, wasn't I?" Bergen didn't answer, just touched her shoulder and offered his hand, coaxing her up from the chair in their intimate little room. The interrogation was over, for now. She would be preened as their star witness. She placed her left hand in his, wincing on the way up.
"That looks nasty," he said.
She extended her hand at arm's length in mock exhibition of her diamond. "I actually believed this was real." Later that afternoon, Bergen summoned a jeweler who arrived with a little bag of tools. Carefully, he cut the band from Rosalind's finger at taxpayer expense. Within a day, the swelling subsided. Within a week, the rash scabbed over. Within 2 weeks, Derek and Sergei were under indictment, and Rosalind was home free, marked with a wide band of new pink skin. It left a permanent, faint impression, a subtle reminder in the years to come, back in the typing pool, hands on display, rattling the keyboard, that her ring finger was and would always remain naked.
Collector's Find is copyrighted by V.S. Camanis. Music for the podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreenmysterymagazine.com.